Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. We're so glad to have you with us here this evening on Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, a two-hour radio show each Tuesday night. Herbal medicine is people's medicine, simple, safe, effective. Please bring your curiosity and health questions. Susan will enlighten, surprise, and delight you. I know most of you know Susan Weed already. She's my mom, so I know her. But for those of you who have not yet met Susan, I'd like to share. She is the author of the Wise Woman Herbal series, wonderful books on women's health and herbal medicine, including Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, Breast Cancer, Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Wise Woman Herbal, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way.
And Abundantly Well, Seven Medicines, The Wise Woman Way, the newest book in the Wise Woman Herbal series.
So exciting.
In addition to being the editor at Ash Tree Publishing and writing her books, Susan is the director of the Wise Woman Center in Woodstock, New York. The Wise Woman Center is open to the public on appointment-only basis. She offers weekend workshops, intensives, and apprenticeships throughout the season. Susan is also available to you online via wisewomanmentor.com. There you can go and view her weekly e-zine. You can subscribe to receive a notification via email each week, or you could join her mentorship program. Susan also offers distance learning correspondence courses and online courses.
TheWiseWomanSchool.com. Join us there for colorful, instructive, easy video courses, including Easy Herbal Medicine with Susan Weed, Happy Knees, a cancer diagnosis, adaptogens for long life, and Abundantly Well companion course, wisewomanschool.com.
You can also just go to her website, susanweed.com, where you will find thousands of pages online with recipes, articles, art features, and so much more. Well, for now, let's see what Susan has to share with us this evening. Thank you, and welcome, Susan.
Thank you, Justine, and welcome, Sarah Ellen.
Hi, Susan. How are you doing this evening?
Oh, what a day. Oh, my gosh. I threw open the doors and turned off the heat.
Ah, ditto. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo, my crocuses were full-throated. The snow drops are trying to cover all the ground they possibly can. There are usually a lot of snowdrops, but this year there are like a lot of snowdrops because the winter was so mild. Oh,
wow.
My gosh. Wow, and because there was no snow cover for the burrowing animals to get in there and eat them.
Oh, that makes sense. Yes.
Right?
There's so many popping up all over our yard. It's so beautiful.
Yes. Oh. And I just received word from the Spanish publishing company that's putting out New Menopausal Years that they need my signature so they can go to press.
Oh, wow. How marvelous.
Wow. So it's a publishing house in Spain, so there'll be a Spanish language edition, and hopefully it will go far and wide. So stay tuned. As we know, there's still some stuff that they need to do, but I should be able to let you know about it surely within the year, if not before summer solstice.
So that's so super.
Yes, so super. We have long wanted to have new menopausal years in Spanish. It's in a lot of other languages, but somehow not Spanish. And now it is done. There was a small COVID delay, as there has been in many of our lives. But now here we are coming back on it. Just finished my 5-session class on adaptogens, starting with ginseng, American ginseng, and ending with two of my favorites, Schisandra, which is acknowledged as an adaptogen, and hawthorn, which has a big rooting section but isn't a traditionally accepted adaptogen.
Mm, two thumbs up for hawthorn as an adaptogen. Yes.
Right? I mean, we're obviously hawthorn's an adaptogen, gang. It's like the poster child of what an adaptogen is supposed to do. Brings up what's down, brings down what's up, takes to the left what's to right, takes to the right what's to left. Which brings me to how I've spent the past 3 days, not every moment of the day, but whenever I could, I was at the Ancient Roots Israel virtual conference.
Oh, I remember you mentioned them last week. Yes.
Yes.
Have you done your... Oh, yeah.
So on the first day of the conference, I very much enjoyed a presentation by, I believe her name was Hanna, on herbs to help people who are grieving and herbs to help people who are in shock. How timely. And she had some very beautiful slides with about 98% of the time the plant pictured was actually the picture she was talking about. There were a couple that weren't, but that's okay. And just, you know, a few things to remember about that plant. And just really such a heartfelt discussion and teaching, and she's also a homeopath, and so she ended with talking about homeopathic remedies, because there are times when you can get homeopathic remedies into places where you can't get actual herbal remedies in. And then I also went to a workshop on astrological herbalism.
Oh.
And I went with an open mind. So as soon as you're going with an open mind, you already know the gig is up, right?
Right.
Right. But I found the history quite fascinating. And she did, you know, tell us that for the vast majority of the time when there have been doctors were also astrologers.
Oh,
and that in the European tradition, in order to be able to practice as a doctor, you had to pass an exam in astrology. And that the astrology was more exact than their anatomy, right?
Oh, my.
Remember, up until 1,000 years ago, it was known throughout the entire educated world that women had nothing whatsoever to do with conception.
Oh, my God.
Right, I'm sure I've mentioned this before. Semen means seed. So the semen was thought to be the entire thing. If you plant a seed, it will grow a plant, right? You can plant it in soil, you can plant it in clay soil, sand soil. You can plant it in peat moss. You can plant it in styrofoam. You can plant, you know, it's a seed. It's going to grow. And so the woman for 2,000 years of human history, throughout the educated world, I'm sure that there were indigenous peoples throughout the world who knew better, but the educated world believed that women were simply the soil. I believe one wit suggested that instead of calling it semen, we should call it pollen.
Wow, it's amazing.
But that's what it is. It's actually pollen, right? It's just the male part, the male fertilizing part that meets up with the ovum in the plant to give rise to the semen, give rise to the seed. So she told us about the long history of astrology and medicine and how important this always was and how it's been lost and we're reclaiming it. And just because lots of human beings have believed something for a long time doesn't make it true.
Right. Indeed.
Nonetheless, I persevered. And she started out by telling us that Mars is hot and Venus is cold. Yeah, right. I mean, she just like totally lost me right there because I happen to know that the planet Venus is closer to the sun and so it's hot and that the planet Mars is further away and that it's cold and if I were on Mars, I would freeze to death. So I'm really having a hard time. And then also I know that both Mars and Venus are like names from the Roman pantheon of gods and goddesses. And that they have, you know, those, all of those, like, stories and stuff associated with them. So I'm, like, writing in the chat, whoa, is this the planet Mars that's hot, or is it the god Mars that's hot? Meanwhile, she has gone on to Saturn, and she's totally conflating the god Saturn and the planet Saturn, talking about the qualities of Saturn and its rings.
Hmm.
So, you know, how beautiful, how wonderful that humans can find meaning and patterns and significant correlations in so many different things. My gripe is that this is a lot of unexamined things from a culture that kept women basically out of it. Yeah, there are goddesses, but goddesses are raped and the husbands run around with on them and, you know, it's like dysfunctional family stuff. And so if we have somehow lost the connection between herbs and these things, perhaps there's a reason.
Yeah. Yep.
Then the next day, oh my gosh, that was yesterday. Yesterday, I started out by having my teeth cleaned, driving to the dentist and having my teeth cleaned. That was lovely. I had a wonderful time. Chatted with the hygienist about how we don't like to talk to people. We talked for like over 10 minutes about how we don't like to talk to people. It was very funny. And we laughed at it.
Oh, my goodness.
And I said to her at the end of it, and you never have to say another word to me. It's okay. Then I came home, and I ate breakfast because I certainly wasn't going to eat breakfast before I went to the dentist. And then it was time for my keynote address at Ancient Roots Israel. And, very rarely long for this to be a show in which you can see things, but I truly wish you could see the amaryllis. The amaryllis that are blooming this year have decided that rather than bloom in late December, early January, that they are going to bloom in late February and early March. And I have one amaryllis which has right now four red blossoms with white throats, each one of which is bigger than my outstretched hand.
Whoa. Wow.
It is. We just stand and like, as a matter of fact, I brought it to be on camera with me at my keynote address, which was about the three traditions of healing. And, you know, I had watched a few of the other presentations, and they were, you know, there were a lot of people with, like, nice slides, and I was thinking, you should have made slides. Oh, my gosh. You should have. And then I just said, no, no, it's going to be okay. You're just going to have them use their imaginations. And I'm sure that you've heard me talk about the three traditions where I ask you to close your eyes and imagine a line.
Mm-hmm.
And then we think about and talk about the scientific tradition. And then I have you go back and imagine that you've taken the two ends of the line and curled them around and brought them together to make a circle. And then we talk about the holistic tradition, the heroic tradition of being inside the circle or outside the circle and following the rules or not following the rules. And then I have them go back to their circle and find the place where they joined it and unjoin it, and to take one end of it and to start curling it around and around and around in a spiral, and that they can stop at any time, but that they can see that there isn't any beginning and there isn't any end, and there's no inside and there's no outside. And then we talk about the wise woman tradition.
Wow.
And I just really, really received such beautiful praise from Rivka, the woman who organized it. She said, Susan, I have heard you talk about the three traditions for years. I have heard this talk many times. She said, and every time I hear it, I hear something new. I find another resonance, another part of it. And that
and it's so true.
So the delicious book, to me.
Yes, your book, the same thing in the green book, because I save my little tabs, and it is amazing. Like, I can't believe I didn't tab this. And just, it's amazing. Time and place, when you pick the book up, it depends on how and what parts speak to you the loudest, at least for me. And yeah, are you going to be talking about that in May at the conference, the three traditions?
At the immersion. Before the conference.
Immersion.
Yes, at the immersion, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. And it's so gratifying that people still want to hear me talk about the three traditions. I really tell you truthfully that when I published the green book, right, Healing Wise, I said to myself, well, now nobody will ever want you to talk about the three traditions because I can just read about it.
No, it's had the opposite effect.
So long, Susan, so long.
Oh,
and then
that.
In the kitchen, there's an amaryllis with blossoms even bigger, which are pale pink fading into white. And one of the blossoms is fully open. One is coming open, will probably be open before the show is over. And you can see the other two buds swelling up. So it's really amaryllis week here. Wow.
And
then today I heard a woman from Oregon talk about being the first legal psilocybin clinic in the United States, if not the world.
Ooh.
Yeah.
In Oregon?
Yes.
Wow.
Wow. She said,
wow.
She said the difference that it made in their practice was they went from having a wait list of four people to having a wait list of 400 people.
I bet they did. Wow.
Right.
Oh, my.
It was just, everything she said was just incredibly fascinating. And then I listened to Matthew Wood, and he was talking about, again, kind of medieval and ancient Jewish and Arabic herbalism, and the kind of series of contrasts that they had with wet and dry and hot and cold and full and empty, and what that looks like if it's doshas, and what it looks like if it's the five element theory, and kind of stirring all of that into one big pot, the four humors and the then he talked about Culpepper being a simpler.
Hmm.
And that one of the reasons for them to use simples was then you could have indications. And it was quite fascinating what he was saying about how this is the particular indication for this thing.
Mm.
Like when you don't have enough oxygen, you turn blue, like you're cold. Rhodiola grows where it's very, very cold. So the indication is rhodiola if you're blue, if you don't have enough oxygen. And he worked with a woman during the COVID bad days, and she was not breathing. Her oxygen saturation was like down in the 70s. He said it was amazing that she was alive. And
wow.
He got some rhodiola. He doesn't know how he got her to get some rhodiola. He doesn't know how she took it. So we're guessing either capsules or tincture. And within the day, her oxygen level was back in the 90s.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy. That's amazing.
Right? So he says, you know, when you teach people, when you don't have any way to take notes, when they just have to remember it all, then it's easiest to use simples and indications.
Mm. And doesn't Matthew Wood usually use very small amounts? Like
he does. He does. Mm. He didn't talk about dosage at all, interestingly enough.
Okay.
But he did talk about, he did mention something that I've never heard him mention before, and maybe he has mentioned it, but he said that the Native American that he learned herbalism from was an outcast because he was a witch, and he was thought to be, right, a bad person by the people he was with, and so he was cast out. So he decided he would teach the white boys how to use herbs.
Oh, my goodness. I did not know that.
So I had never heard him talk about that at all, but I thought, isn't that fascinating? Where some of these things come from. He's got such a brilliant, brilliant mind. He was also talking about an herb, kind of a rare herb that's kind of hard to get, that really tremendously helped him control his blood sugar.
Hmm.
So he was just filled with information today. Really fantastic. And he harked back to a story between him and myself, which was just wonderful to hear him talking a little bit about, because somebody asked about herbs for autoimmune conditions, and he said, well, Susan Weed turned me on to the only herb you'll ever need for autoimmune conditions, and that's linden flower.
Oh, yay, linden.
And you probably remember the story that Matthew and I were on this panel to four herbalists who were supposed to give this woman advice, and if there could be anything wrong with you, it was wrong with her. The first herbalist said, well, for her heart, I would use these four herbs, and for her nervous system, these four, and for her breathing, you know, these four. And so at the end of it, he had like, you know, 15 or 20 herbs that she should use. And the second one said, that's good, and I would add to it. And started adding this, that, and the other thing. So by the time he was done. There was like 30 or 35 herbs. And then it was Matthew. And Matthew wanted to add yet more to it. Yes, small doses, but he still wanted there to be lots of different herbs. And it got to me, and I said, all this woman needs is linden.
Wow.
And Matthew asked the woman and I to stay after it broke up. Because, you know, at that point, basically, we had done our thing, and the, you know, MC said, well, that's it, good night, folks, and da-da-da. And Matthew said, stay. And he took her pulses, and then he wrote the word linden on a piece of paper, put it in her hand, curled her fingers around it, and took her pulses and looked up and said, mm-hmm, that's right. All she needs is linden. And this story has so many, like, mind-boggling aspects to it, right?
Yeah. Wow.
Yes, you don't even know where to start in going, oh, and then but what about the, oh, what, the, he wrote it on a piece of paper, yeah.
Wow.
Well, haven't we been the talkative ones here tonight? My goodness. In an hour from now, Katya Preciado is going to be with us. We will see how badly I just murdered her name. We'll actually get her to pronounce it. She is a community herbalist and specializes in teaching African and African-American herbal traditions. She has a TEA method and a 4 levels of safety and a 4-step journey. So come on back in an hour or stick with us until 9 o'clock and hear from Katya. I'm pretty sure that's how she says her first name is Katya. But Preciado, we'll see. Anything else you want to share with us, Sarah?
Oh, no, thank you, Susan. No, thank you. All is well.
Okay, all the Ancient Roots Israel workshops were recorded, both, I believe, picture and sound, and they can be yours. I think they're charging a mere $250 for the whole thing. Oh, my gosh, so much. I just told you about 5 of the events. There are lots more. Ancient Roots Israel, really great conference. And I guess we should open it up for questions.
All right. I am seeing lots of callers dialed in. I will let them all know that if you have a question for Susan this evening, all you need to do is press 1. That will get your hand raised. We'll see you in the queue. And when it's your turn, I will announce your area code and open your line for your live time with Susan. I'm seeing 3 hands raised at this time. We'll go to the first, who is dialed in from the 845 area code. In the 845, you are live with Susan.
Thank you, Sarah Ellen. Hello, Susan.
Hi.
Hi, lucky me.
You.
How are you?
You got to be the first tonight.
What you doing?
Yeah.
Just sitting around farting.
That must mean you're eating your beans. Good girl.
Well, beans are a little rough for me, like, but I have been increasing my fiber.
Good for
yes.
you. I hear you.
Yeah,
beans are tough. They really are. Yeah.
Yeah. I can do a little bit of the ground up, like pasty, you know, like a little chickpea or something.
All right.
But, huh?
That's the goal. Just keep seeing where you can get beans to agree with you. Not all beans
yeah.
agree with, without a doubt. It's been
sure.
something I've been working on for 4 years. I couldn't tolerate any beans at all when they cut me loose from my surgery.
Yeah, it's something about skins. They seem to be better tolerated without the skins. And I've been trying to eat a little bit of skin.
That's why I found that the canned beans were a good entry for me.
Yeah, uh-huh. They say that.
Right?
Yeah, easier.
Yep.
Yes,
yep.
True. And I was also reading that little tiny red beans, not kidney beans, but the
Rohan beans.
Huh?
The dookie beans of my macrobiotic days.
Is that another name? The little tiny, tiny red
ones?
The
little tiny red ones are dookie beans.
Yes. They say those are the most easiest to digest if you have a problem with the beans.
Oh,
and
nice.
They are an absolute
macrobiotic staple.
I love them. I was in Louisiana for a while. That's where I learned to love them.
Uh-huh.
Red beans and rice. Yeah, oh, yeah.
Right. Beans and rice. Yep. Yep, the food of the world.
Oh, yeah.
For our first meal at Green Goddess Week is always beans and rice. And I tell the women, we are eating in sympathy with all of the people of the world tonight.
I love that.
Those who actually have something to eat are probably eating beans and rice.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I wish I could have more of them. I'm trying, but at least I'm getting more fiber in other ways. But it makes more flatulence, and, you know, I don't mind it if I don't have company and whatnot. But other than that, is it a bad thing or it's incidental? I know it's just my food fermenting. I mean, I think I know that's what it is.
Actually, interestingly, what it is, is the, exactly as you said, the indigestible parts of the food, and because it's literally indigestible, they make it all the way down to the colon, and there they feed the most important bacteria in your gut. The bacteria that make you smile and go about doing your stuff, singing, and the bacteria that sop up your cholesterol no matter how much butter you put on your toast in the morning.
Cool.
Cool, yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Picturing it. Mm-hmm. Kind of feels that way. It feels like jet fuel almost.
Yeah.
And the slippery elm, I've been adding that in a little bit more, which I tend not to do, like, for a dietary need, but I don't know if there's enough fiber down there for that party. I want them to be happy. It's like a symphony.
That's right. happy.
So how'd you make out with all that wind the other night?
Boy, that was some wind, wasn't it?
Oh.
The goats are so frightened of the wind. They will not leave the barn when the wind is going like that.
Thinking of them. Oh, yeah.
And I haven't gotten, you know, out into the woods to see how much blowdown there was, but I'm sure there will be some trail clearing to be done.
Yeah, I had to chase a patio umbrella down the driveway today so I could get into my car. I was like, oops.
So a
big fence got blown down on somebody's property, and there just happened to be a whole row of this really advanced growth motherwort. So I decided to rescue it before the men came and stumped it with their boots to put the fence back up.
I hear you.
And I've been putting in it in buckets and boxes, you know, a plant here, a plant there every time I visit. And because I know they're going to be slow to get into the work. But I noticed I was driving around for a couple of days with one plant and how happy I felt.
Oh.
Because everywhere I went, there she was.
There she was. Mother, what is evergreen in our region?
I would say so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Based on what I saw this winter,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was green the whole way through.
And it's really starting to stretch out and say, I can feel those rays getting longer and warmer. Give them to me.
Yeah.
Me too. Me too. Oh, yeah. Feels good.
Yeah. And the garlic mustard, too. That's another one that likes to shine early.
Absolutely. I was just looking at my calendar and saying, look at that. Here we are already nearly to Justine's birthday, right? Justine's birthday is in 2 days.
Oh, wow.
So 58 years ago, I took a bus to Bellevue Hospital. I took a bus down Avenue A to Bellevue Hospital.
Amazing.
And there, Justine came to be with us. Oh, I am so happy. Happy birthday a couple of days early. And I said, well, that means that classes start in a month. Sure enough, Spring Tonics are one of my favorite classes of the year, the woodland ephemerals. And we go out and we see and eat the dwarf ginseng and the coptis and the hepatica and plants that are beautiful, but they only bloom for a tiny bit of time in the very early spring before the trees leaf out.
Right.
So it's always my first workshop of the year, spring ephemerals. Let's come and really be present, right, at the places where the fairies are going to be.
I saw that that's coming up. Now, is that this month?
April.
Or next month. April, that's what I thought. I wanted to ask you, the coptis. I'm sorry I didn't have the time to look that plant up, but I was reading the plants, and I said, gee, I don't know. I can't remember. What plant is coptis?
Coptis is also called gold thread. I usually call it by its botanical name because it's used in Chinese medicine, and it's called coptis in Chinese medicine. So it's the easiest thing to look up. You see why it's called gold thread when we're out there and looking at it. The roots are literally like golden threads in the soil. They're so thin.
How pretty.
And
a lot of the roots are yellow in the spring plants, aren't they? What is that?
Only some roots are yellow, and that's usually an indication of berberine.
Berberine, that's what I was thinking. And does the yellow thread have that, too?
Yes.
Oh, I don't
yes,
think.
Good source of berberine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not absolutely endangered, that it's not actually threatened, but it's one of those woodland plants that needs some alone time.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't like to have people tromping through it. I take a group there once a year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so as, you know, developments go in and even trails go in, then it's these kinds of plants that we go out to see in my first workshop of the year that are so precious, so very precious to it. And how aptly named they are, the ephemerals. It's so lovely talking to you. But I thought I heard Sarah Ellen say that there were a lot of hands raised. Did you? Is that what you said, Sarah Ellen?
Yes.
I just want to check in with her.
Yes, there are 4 other callers on the line.
Okay, and since I already talked a lot, I'm going to say thank you for calling. Green blessings
and
good night.
Thank you. Glad to know you're well. Good night.
Good night.
All right. And if you have a question and would like to speak live with Susan this evening, all you need to do is press 1. We'll see your hand up in the queue and announce your area code when it is your turn. Next, we'll go to the 650 area code. From the 650, you are live with Susan.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Good evening. I know it's been such a so nice to hear you guys talk and think of all the spring and looking forward to all these good things. It's like, oh, I look outside my window, I see little buds on the branches. And
I just have to stop you because you called me a guy.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm not a guy.
I'm sorry. You know, I've heard you say it before, and I even
Sarah
think
Ellen is not a guy.
No, you're completely right.
And you know that I've been telling women for over 30 years that if they call each other guys and allow themselves to be called guys, that they will lose their reproductive rights because guys don't need reproductive rights. Could we stop now, please?
No, you're very right. I know. I've heard you say it before, and I think of it, but in the moment it escaped my mind.
It's because you have not made an actual effort to rid yourself of this noxious word. Because you don't truly believe that it's noxious. You think it's just you guys and that it's okay. But it's not. Thank you. Please go on. It's a beautiful spring, but I'm not a guy. And perhaps we should go to the next caller. Sounds like something interfered with her line.
Yes, I see her call has disappeared. We will move to the next caller. You're dialed in from the 347 area code. From the 347, you are live with Susan.
Hi, Susan. Hi, how are you? So
I'm well, and you?
Good, good. It's so wonderful to talk to you. I've admired you from afar for so long. I studied with a few of your students, I'm going through a health crisis right now, and I'm trying to make a very large decision, which might even include hysterectomy, which is a very hard decision for me. So I wanted to kind of get a little bit of input.
Okay.
So I have, you know, I had a history, and it's been going on for about 8 years, where I was getting gut inflammation, then I was getting really, you know, profuse uterine bleeding, painful periods, then it became ovarian cysts, and I started getting left hip pain, and I was gaining weight when I was, like, teaching yoga classes and I was running a running club. It was kind of like opposite of what should be happening. And my mother, this was kind of right after my mother had passed from endometrial cancer in 2015 is when it started. And granted, after about like a 40-day bleed and like hemorrhaging, I had a biopsy, and they said like I had, a disordered proliferated endometrium, which means that, you know, things weren't growing, you know, like all the same because my hormones were off. I'm also estrogen dominant. So now I am aware, so as I became, you know, like I was tried, you know, I was using herbal infusions, I was using chaseberry, I was going to an acupuncturist, functional medicine doctor, using chickweed tincture for the ovarian cysts that I'd made myself and the chaseberry tincture, pelvic floor therapy. I was working with an Ayurveda doctor to help with some diet, which really helped to bring down the inflammation for a while, and everything was good until that 40-day bleed, because I had stopped the chase. I'll tell you, I stopped the chase very
Can I ask you how old you are? You don't
I'm
have to 40, tell me, but...
Yeah, I'm 48 coming up this month. So on the first day of spring, I'll be 48. Yeah, and so I
so,
went to the doctor.
So my guess is that you're probably in menopause.
Yes. So I agree. I'm definitely like in, I knew it, at first I thought it was just
And I don't think I have ever met a woman who hasn't had a 30 or 40 day bleed or one or two incidents of the 3 foot wide bleed during menopause.
Yeah, yes. And that's exactly what I thought it was.
It's horrible.
Like,
I'm not saying, oh, this is normal. It's not normal. It feels terrible.
Yeah.
Right. I remember, you know, standing there and it's like, what is this day like 34 drip, 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 drip? Enough. I can't take this anymore.
Yes, and I had a hemorrhage, which is what happened. And I knew about the flooding because I'd read your book, right? So I did the things. I actually used a little bit of shepherd's purse to slow it. But I ended up going to the doctor, which is why they had to do the biopsy, because of my mother passed away from endometrial cancer. So granted, she was at ground zero, and she had taken hormones, which they said was probably what caused it, the hormones at the time. So, but the thing was, I recently went to the ER from a cyst on the, because, and they, when I went in from the pain on my left, it was in my left side, they said that I had a really large cyst, and then I ended up going in for an MRI, and they diagnosed me with deep infiltrating endometriosis, diffuse adenomyosis, and my ovaries were tethered to my, are tethered to my uterus. And one of them is tethered to the bowel. And so I am now faced with a surgery. And they are, you know, to unkind of tangle things. And they also recommended removing the uterus for the adenomyosis. So I had an adenomyosis and an endometriosis. And adenomyosis is just the endometriosis of the actual uterus, right? I'm kind of torn with giving away, you know, with taking my uterus. I just feel like...
Are they going to leave your ovaries?
Yes, they want to leave my ovaries, yeah.
I am struck throughout this conversation at how little you appear in it. Are you going to keep your ovaries? Yes, they want to keep my ovaries. So I wound up getting this test.
Yeah.
And it strikes me that you have no agency here.
Mm.
And I don't really care how you use your agency, but I'd like to see you have some.
Yeah, I don't want to give up my uterus. I don't. And that's how I feel.
What does tethered mean?
So it's actually, because I have endometriosis, there is tissue
mm-hmm.
that basically, you know,
uh-huh.
Grows, and it overtakes everything. And it could actually infiltrate the bowel and cause blockages and things like that because the endometriosis.
Absolutely good. And what generally happens to endometriosis after you're through menopause?
So in some cases, the doctor, you know, what I have read and what the doctor, and I've done a lot of research, is that sometimes it can go into, you know, kind of a remission in a sense where it stops growing. But in other cases, that's not always the case because there are many women in a lot of these forms that are postmenopausal that are still having issues and end up having to have have complications postmenopausal. So that's where it's kind of like that. You know, you get, there's so much information out there, you know, and I'm
there
just
is,
not
there
even
is,
sure.
And how
yeah.
wonderful that we have access to all of it and can
it
really
is.
See, you know, what's
mm-hmm.
going on. And it's also, when did your mother take hormones? And what for?
So she took them, and again, you know, she was from the time where they didn't really talk about things, you know. So I just knew that she took hormones, and I want to say she was around, she was a little older than me. Yeah, just a little,
but
not
she
that much
took,
older than me.
She took hormones during her menopause.
Correct. It was because she was having
She didn't take
issues.
Hormones while she was pregnant with you.
No. It was during.
All right. It was such a general
yeah.
statement. I wanted to just tie
yes.
it down a little.
Exactly. She took them, I guess it was like the beginning. It was the HRT, but it wasn't called HRT back then. They were just giving hormones. She was having horrible hot flashes and things like that. But I think that there might have been more to it. I think she was also having heavy bleeding and stuff like that. So, and she was. But she didn't really talk about the details of it, so I never really... It was hard to talk to her about it. She got very defensive.
Right. Well, what do they generally do for teenagers with heavy bleeding? They give them birth control pills.
Yes.
And so I have also talked to women in your situation and suggested ask your doctor if you are a candidate for birth control pills to control the bleeding and the endometriosis.
Yeah, so I did talk to them. So I have see, and this is kind of where we have with endometriosis, there are two different schools. There is a school that a little bit more moderate where they will do the just the hormones. And then they also, well, they'll try that first, like all of the other, you know, the medical interventions first. But the other doctors that are doing the excision specialists are saying that the hormones are actually the hormones, and these are the people that are doing a lot of the research in endometriosis, that the hormones are actually causing more harm than good. And in some cases, that the that they feel that the unless you're doing the progesterone only, the estrogen, you know, adding the estrogen actually increases the growth of the tissue. And so, you know, and the excision
specialist. Birth control pills are progesterone, not estrogen.
Both. I think they had both, right? You have the ones that have both the estrogen and progesterone, and then you have the progesterone
usually,
only
the
one.
Best,
yeah.
The best ones are just the progesterone, and
yes.
Or there are progesterone-eluting IUDs.
Uh-huh.
Again, I seem to hear you being told there's a 1% chance that this will happen, and you turn that into it mostly happens that.
Mm.
Now, they're not using percentages, but what I hear you saying is occasionally, sometimes, and yet you say these words as though they meant always and forever.
Yeah. I'm trying, I guess, to kind of grasp what's right for me. And I've been
are paid to see the worst. They are paid to envision the worst. They do see the worst. You aren't the worst.
Yeah. And I guess what my concern is that it might infiltrate my the bowel. You know, the fact that my and also that my ovaries.
So what is a better way to deal with that? To think over and over again that this might happen, or to create a specific visualization of that not happening every time that thought pops up? Your body believes every word you think. Let's be clear, surgery leaves scar tissue. You're betraying adhesions from endometriosis for adhesions from surgery.
Oh, I feel the same way. That's exactly what I'm concerned about. And it's like, yes, that's exactly how I feel. So that was one of the questions that I've kind of like put out there to different people that I've been speaking to is that, you know, like, isn't there the possibility of creating more adhesions by doing this? And then, but I also have such, you know, pain in my left hip just from my, like, I can't do the things, like, I can't practice, you know, or do any movement like I used to because of the hip pain that it's causing, because it's pressing on my, it's been pressing on my nerve. And this has been going, before I even knew what it was, you know, I knew that there was an issue and I was going for physical therapy and, you know, doing all this stuff. And
so
I feel like
it's always fascinating to me when we have done as much as you have done so wholeheartedly, how we continue to resist the deep mother work that we need. And as I have nothing against your giving up your uterus, but I have heard you say several times in this conversation that you don't want to.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to, then it's pretty obvious from what you're saying that none of these physical things has any real meaning. What's really going on here is as Dr. Sarna would say, in your unconscious. And all of your pain is from spasms in your muscles caused by tension, caused by unconscious urges.
Did you say who was that, Dr.?
Dr. S-A-R-N-O. Dr. Sarno. Check out the Pain Cure Clinic. Dr. Sarno is no longer with us. His books are. And two people who carry on his work do the Pain Cure Clinic online. And it is quite remarkable what they are doing and the stories that people have to tell. In short, she got him involved in Sarno because he had back pain, and that was Sarno's specialty. And this is true even if scans show damage to the spine, that it's still muscle tension. It's not the actual damage to the spine that's causing the pain. And so she got him involved, and he said to her, well, you should get involved too. You have chronic pain from arthritis. And she said, oh, no, it wouldn't work for me. And he said, yeah, that's what Dr. Sarno says about most people. And most people won't even try it because they say it won't work for you. And that got her hackles up, and she did it, and she completely relieved pain that she had had for decades.
You know, it's so funny that you say this because I asked you to say his name because I literally, somebody just posted in like one of these forums, in Demetrius forum, about Dr. Sarno, and I looked up his book right before I talked to you. So that's
Dive in. You have exhausted all of your other options except diving in to what you're creating or diving into surgery.
Yeah, yeah.
And right now, I think that you're still at a place where you have room to dive into Sarno. But that's really your call and your decision. And there'll be plenty of chronic pain to deal with after the surgery. Don't worry about it. You'll still have plenty of pain to deal with. You'll still need Sarno. As a matter of fact, the opioid epidemic is mostly fueled by women who've had pelvic surgery.
Yeah, I know. And I think about all of those things and even the risk involved.
So again,
that, right?
It's like, not like, oh, we're going to operate on you and relieve your pain forever. You may wind up in as much pain.
Yes, I know. Or more, right? And that is the other risk.
It's very possible that you could be in more. But certainly it's, you know, not a given that surgery will relieve pain.
Yeah. And it's the pain, and like you said, I think that is it. It's like that fear of it, like, what if it goes into my thing? And because of the pain that I was having, you know, from this.
Right,
you know,
what if it, what
ER.
If it? I hear you, but I don't find for myself that it's viable to live my life on what ifs. And if something persists and is taking my energy in that way, then I create something to counter it. So if I find myself thinking, oh, that wasn't really just a little spot on my finger, that was the beginning of skin cancer, I'm like, okay, let's really ask ourselves, you know, how realistic is this? And you're a person who does really good homework. And you're a human being.
Yeah.
And we tend, because our ancestors who survived tended to look for what bad can happen. Right? When I said to my surgeon, I want you to leave my ovaries, she said, yes, but what if, and what if, and what if, and what if, and what if? And I'm like, you know, dear, what ifs? Leave my ovaries. But, she knew all the bad things that could happen. Good for her. I'm glad she knows that.
Can I ask a question?
That's their training. Yeah. But it's not necessarily us. And it doesn't help us to take that on. So what could one do if you're concerned that your endometrial tissue could be growing and could possibly invade your colon? If I was in that situation, I would say, okay, I need to start a five-minute practice every single day where I check in with my body and say, are there any Amber Alerts going on? Do you have 5 minutes a day to give to yourself?
Yeah.
People say, well, how did you find your cancer? I said, how could I not find it? I check in with myself.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I've been feeling with that hip pain, which ended up being the sit, you know what I'm saying, for so long, you know, where I knew it was something and I was trying to, you know, find all these ways to kind of tend to it in a less invasive way, right? without it, you know, having to go through, like, you know, all these other things to see if, like, there was something that I could do for it, you know, so...
Yeah, and it is
that checking in that kind of brought me to that space. Obviously, but sometimes we ignore it. Yeah,
give yourself credit.
Yeah,
right. You're not an ordinary person. There's a bell curve, right? You know about bell curves?
Yeah.
Okay. Where are you on the bell curve?
I don't know.
That's good. Would you say that your diet is average?
I'd say my diet is pretty above average.
I would guess as well. Even though you can't do physically things that you have done, does that mean that you are very sedentary?
I would say that I still go out and I'm still, you know, doing walks and stuff, but it wasn't like I used to be. You know, I don't have
it's not like
energy.
You used to be, but you're still on a daily basis moving.
Yeah.
Even standing still and waving your arms around counts.
Yes. Even when I'm working from home, so I have a standing desk, you know, it's like I just got, you know, so that I can stand more and not, you know, and allow blood to circulate better, that type of thing. But, I just feel like I wish there could be, you know, obviously this is always the problem, right? And I also know that I'm also coming to the space where, but I'm still rather young, right? Like I also know that I'm also changing, right? I'm right in the center of this change, right? As well as all of the stuff going on in my body. And I'm wondering, you know, for the longest, I was just like, it's just menopause, and I just need to figure out how to, you know, recalibrate and to accept this space that I'm in and where my body is at and, you know, that type of thing. But then I found that, you know, then the pain and all of that other stuff, you know, and I had it under control for a while. It was great, you know. And then all of a sudden, you know.
I hear you, and then suddenly. And again, to me, this is where the Sarno work is priceless. Because once you get involved in the Sarno work, you'll go back and you will see exactly what was going on that occurred.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that you will necessarily be able to change it. You might at that point say, yes, I totally understand this, and this is going to be a reoccurring theme in my life, and so I'm getting the surgery because I'm not going to be able to control this. That's certainly possible.
Yeah.
But you will have, I think, a much more voluntary, volitional feeling. Right now, I get the sense from you that you're letting people talk you into something that doesn't feel right to you.
Yeah. I mean, we have, when I spoke to the last surgeon who was, he's like the lead in this kind of field in New York. So I said, the last time I spoke to him, when we had our consult, he said, you have a, and he did, he was very, he's very, very, he said, I will do whatever it is that you like. This is my recommendation. And, you know, I can also have a surgery where they just remove the ovaries from the that are stuck, right, with tissue, against my, and disattach the colon, you know, where it's attached to my bowel.
Attached to the colon.
Yes, and they could leave the rest, right? Like he said, he believes he could save the. He said I can save the ovary, based on the MRI that he saw. You know, there's always chance that something could, you know, if it's too bound. But right now they have huge cysts. They have cysts on them, right? So that's pressing against my hip. It's that type of thing where I'm still like I can go the lesser route. I can go halfway.
And again, what I'm saying is that Sarno says that no matter what the scan shows, that's not what's causing the pain.
All right. I'm gonna take up this Sarno. I feel like he is between you and that. I feel like
give Dr. Sarno a waltz or two and see what you come up with.
That sounds like a great plan. Yeah.
All righty. Thanks so much for your call. I'm gonna talk to somebody
else now.
Read
okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right, and we'll go to the next caller that has dialed in from the 336 area code. From the 336, you are live with Susan.
Well, hey, Susan. Green blessings.
Green blessings.
I am so excited to talk to you. You always make my day. Today was amazing, beautiful. The sun was out. We had 70-some degrees. I've got bees, dandelions blooming. You know why I put myself in that perspective? Susan Weed.
Yes.
You remind me of that are good and what green blessing actually means.
Thank you for giving me that place. Thank you so much for giving me that place, giving me that power. Thank you for...
Well, thank you for putting me
for being available to remember it.
Oh, and second thing I'm excited about, Red Clover Conference. First year, I've signed up. Can't be there in person, but I will be there online, and I am so excited for it. Because in my neck of the woods, what is red clover? We spray that. We kill that. Maybe the cows eat it, but that's a nuisance. And I'm like, no, it's not. But okay. So I'm excited.
Yes, there are places where it's actually considered an invasive weed, and people try to get rid of it.
Yep, my neck of the woods. And I even purchased, which I don't know, because it is an actual plant that just nature grows for you, but what if something happens to the red clover I have? So I actually bought supposedly organic red clover to be able to, like, just plant in case something happened to my wild patch that just grows, like dandelions, white clover, red clover. Like, in my area, it is spray it, kill it. These are weeds. Why does anybody care about this?
Yes, and, it's a weed. You're so right.
But again, it's, excuse me. Have you met, do you know who Susan Weed is? But I'm sorry, you probably don't. But no worries, I do, and I will not be killing the ones that nature has given me to grow in my yard.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, my question in human tonight, it is, about my goats.
All right.
We
What's
are in
going
season.
On with you?
Season.
Here it is, season, yeah.
Yep. My sunbeam had triplets, had three. Thriving, amazing, doing good. All right.
All right. She's mothering all three of them.
Yep, perfect. Beautiful.
Good for her.
But my dandelion, bless her heart, did not fare so well. I don't know what happened. Went out there one morning, all of a sudden, oh, God, this doesn't look natural. She wound up having a C-section, and we've got two little beautiful baby goats, Monkey and Molly, which now I'm bottle feeding because she just, after 48 hours, said, you know, I know you're my children, but I just can't deal with it. And there we are. And I even took back
after. Is she still alive and with you and just refusing the babies?
Yes. She is refusing the babies, but she is thriving.
Well, that's really something when they do that, isn't it?
And
they
turn
their back on them like, I don't even see you.
But not the crazy thing was that she would clean them. She acknowledged. I was still trying to get over the fact that, okay, you just cut my goat's stomach open on this concrete floor on a Sunday morning. And she was, it was just a female by herself. And I said, you know, I don't know what you need me to do, but I'm here to help you if you need me. And she was, I'm 54. She looked like she was 12 and had it all under control. Did the C-section, saved my baby goats. I mean, just amazing. But Dandelion cleaned her babies. No nursing, no feeding, no getting near the feet. I will acknowledge, I will smell you, but get the hell away from me. How about that?
Wow.
So now I'm feeding, doing whatever. But her herd, Dandelion's mom and sibling, will have nothing to do with her. And they won't let her eat. It's like separated to begin with because of her stitches, whatever, from the C-section. And she was so sad because she was away from her little flock. And I thought, I'm going to have to let you be sad. You can drink. You can have your cake. But you got to be sad because I don't want you to get hurt. Well, it got to the point that I couldn't. I mean, she just was not eating, barely drinking anything. And so I let her back out into her.
This is the one
amongst her people. Yeah, let her back amongst her people. And they kind of accepted her back in, but it was just like, not really sure that I'm going to bring you back in quite yet. And still,
wow.
And this has been two and a half weeks now that I still have to go out there and make sure she eats. Like, I will take her food over in the corner and sit there with her while she eats because the other ones, which she grew up with, will not accept her back into the group.
Because she was isolated from them for a while.
That's what I'm
saying. Interesting, because I've had goats accept back in a goat that was sold and then returned back after 5 months.
And they know. Like, I've had goats before, but I've never had the kids. Like, it's just not been... It was an actual accident because I had gotten Mordecai, who was a beautiful, beautiful goat, but Mordecai was too, I guess, ambitious and I was afraid that the neighbors were going to call me because they thought somebody was being murdered on my property with the amount of racket. And I'm like, okay, do people not know this is what goats do? And then, but he got to all the females before he found a new home. But I've never not seen them, like you said, be accepted back in. I mean, I rescue other animals and whatever. And
yeah.
They will not accept her back into her group, and this is the one that has triplets, Sunbeam.
Yeah.
Well, that was Dandelion's mom. I've got Basil, that's a male.
Exceptionally strange when her mom won't reaccept her.
No, will not, period. And the crazy thing is, now I have her two kids inside with me, and they have their little diapers on, and They're currently going out on the same schedule as the dogs in the morning, noon, afternoon, evening. So they go outside to go to the bathroom, which is crazy. But I have these two kids in here with me.
That's great.
I bottle feed them. I bottle feed them every 3 to 4 when they're hungry. I'm not going to force them to eat, but when they're hungry, they wake me up. They let me know. But Sean, she's not, now Dandelion is not aggressive, not going after them. She's very docile, but her herd will not accept her back.
Will the kids hang out with her?
Yes. And do you know that she will still come over? Because when I go outside, they go outside, and we go to the goat hut, the goat pen, and they
and can. And the kids are how old now?
They are 2.5 weeks now.
They're going 2.5 weeks.
It'll be 3 weeks. It'll be 3 weeks this coming Sunday.
By the time they're 6 weeks old, I think she will be able to make a satellite pack with them. And they may not be totally accepted by the herd, but they will graze close to it. I've had that happen a couple of times, where a mom and her kids became a satellite to the other herd, even though I only had a few goats. So that's my best bet, because there's nothing you're going to do to convince them.
No.
They're pretty unconvincible. Once they've made up their mind about how they're going to act, that's pretty much what's going to happen. And our getting in the way of that is just going to make us miserable. So let's envision that the kids will continue to relate to her, and then she'll continue to relate to the kids, and that they will form a little satellite group. And
I'm your aunt.
Eventually, I think
I am your
will,
second cousin.
Yeah. Get back in the graces of the herd. And wonderful speaking with you and hearing about this. Please do call us back in a month and let us know what's happening with these babies and your goats, okay?
Now, what I need you to do real quick is if you come up with some herbal nourishing infusions that we could administer to our livestock as well as ourselves. I drink them.
All of the nourishing herbal infusions work just fine for animals. I've used all of the nourishing herbal infusions, Comfrey, for injured animals, but all animals respond to them. And many animals, like somebody said to me, well, how do I get the goats to take them? And I said, well, I just let the goats brew their own infusion. I just open the bag of herb and let them chow down. And then I figure they brew infusion in their bellies.
Well, they
or I make sure that they had access to those herbs. Like my goats have access to nettles. They have access to red clover. I don't grow oat straw, but I certainly get hay that has some oats in it. So they fight me for the linden. I have to fight them off so that I get the linden and not them. And so that's what I find. Of course, my goats are free range. They get to pretty much eat whatever it is that they want. So that does make it a little easier for them to get the herbs. But you're safe working with any of the nourishing herbal infusions with any animal. No problem there at all.
Well, green blessings, and thank you. And I will call you back and let you know how Dandelion and the crew are doing. But thank you so much. Green blessings.
Green blessings. Good night.
All right. And we have two callers with their hand raised. We'll go back to the 650. And the 650, you are live with Susan.
They're uplifting, and what advice can she give you? Where are you going?
Hello. Hi. Hello, 650. It's your turn.
Oh. Hello. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
It's your turn to ask a question.
I
Hello.
Was, Hi, Susan. I was seeking your advice. I've been in a situation, 2020, woke up blind in my right eye. I had a calcium deposit build up. I had a baby valve on my heart. It did not grow into adulthood, and it had a calcium deposit build up in it, and it went into my retina and turned off the lights on my right side. And then I had to go in for open heart surgery a week later. And 2 years.
You get a better valve in there.
Yeah, they put a cal valve, I believe. And
how's the valve working for you now?
Well, you know, it's been getting the cardiovascular back has been it's been a struggle. Resting heart, like, oxygen level isn't what it used to be, because I'm a surfer, and I like to be in the ocean, and I used to take wipeouts and just take and be able to hold my breath for a long time. Now, not so long, but the issue is about a year and a half ago, two Octobers ago, woke up in the hospital once again. They said that I had a seizure on the freeway in the fast lane, and shut down Highway 101 for 20 minutes. And since then,
why?
I've been what was that?
Oh my!
Yeah,
I'm so glad that you're still with us and that you didn't harm yourself
or kill anybody else.
I didn't want to say that because I didn't know, but thank you for reassuring us.
Yes. No, it's been nothing but a life-turning event, and for the worst. And unfortunately, I have no control over the situation. Since then, I've had five other seizures since then. And I guess averaging like three months or something. I've never had one in my life, and it just started out of the blue. And I've never really had to take any medications or anything in my life until now. I was riddled with all kinds of anti-seizure medications, and it's just been a nightmare. I do surf, and I'm in good shape, I was just wondering, you know, is there advice is there anything you suspect would be triggering these seizures? Because all the, you know, brain scans and MRIs and CAT scans and all this stuff comes back with no cancer, no brain tumor, thank God, because, you know, at that point they're saying, you know, this could be triggered from something, you know, devastating. So God.
Well, I'm glad that we can rule all of that out, that it's not being caused by a tumor. Do you think that it's possible that the wipeouts and the general beating that you take surfing could have at some point left your brain without sufficient oxygen, so that some of it may have been slightly damaged, and that slight damage might have occurred over and over?
Oh, I wouldn't push it to that limit. But maybe the clock.
I don't have a big connection to surfing. My granddaughter surfs. I went to UCLA, so I know a little bit about it. And you mentioned, you know, wiping out, and I know that there can be significant deprivations of oxygen, and that certainly we're discovering that the brain damage that occurs even in high school, football can be far more disturbing to the brain than we previously thought.
Huh. Well, maybe there's possible some of the calcium, one of a deposit or something went into my brain too. I'm not sure, but I've never had a seizure and all of a sudden they're just starting out of the blue. And,
yeah.
And
so
what would be your advice for me to go?
Things that make the blood vessels stronger include hawthorn and Chironopsis. And if what they're saying is that the seizure is being caused by weakness in blood vessels, that could possibly help. I've worked with a variety of different people with seizures, and there's nothing that reliably helps. One woman, the woman who is the most harmed by the seizure, she had both grand mal and petite mal seizures, and when she had a grand mal seizure, she would lose weeks of her life.
Yeah.
Wipe her memory. And acupuncture was the only thing that dependably reduced the frequency of the seizures.
What was that? What?
Acupuncture.
Say again?
Acupuncture could dependably reduce the frequency of the seizures. It didn't stop her from having seizures, but it cut down on the number of seizures that she had.
Well, I'm taking the really, you know, heavy medication from the hospital, the stuff that they put in your IV if you're going into an active seizure to snap you out of it in the hospital bed. And now I have to take it every 12 hours. So I was wondering if there's maybe a possible homeopathic approach, possibly, or...
And you're thinking homeopathic because you think homeopathic doesn't work?
No, I'm asking you if there's a homeopathic approach that you recommend.
Not sure why you're asking about homeopathy rather than herbs. That's what I'm asking. And it's because you think homeopathy doesn't work, and therefore it's okay to use with drugs.
No, I was just asking advice. I'm not
a homeopath. Is all I'm saying is it's odd for me to be asked about homeopathy because it's not my area of expertise.
Okay.
That herbs, partly because, and I did study somewhat to be a classical homeopath, and soon realized that homeopaths, by and large, spent a lot of time with their noses in books, and I wanted to spend time with my nose in nature, and that homeopaths believed a lot of things that I don't believe. I don't believe that shaking something up and beating it makes it better.
What herbs do you recommend?
Herbs... Are you currently drinking nourishing herbal infusions?
No.
And do you know what nourishing herbal infusions are?
No.
Okay. A nourishing herbal infusion is a large amount of herb brewed for a long amount of time. And what I find is that many people are injuring their health because they are drinking water. And I urge people to stop drinking water and to instead drink nourishing herbal infusion. I rotate through 5 different herbs that I use on a regular basis: stinging nettle, oat straw, comfrey leaf, red clover, and linden. Linden is a wonderful place for you to start because it's an antispasmodic and an anti-inflammatory. As a matter of fact, I think that linden is a better anti-inflammatory than turmeric by a factor of maybe 100 times. And yet linden is completely safe to use no matter what drug you're taking. It's not going to interfere with any drug.
Wonderful.
So you can make linden infusion by weighing out half an ounce of linden, putting it in a quart jar, filling the jar to the top with boiling water, screwing a tight lid on it, and letting it steep like that overnight. Stinging nettle is another very important nourishing herbal infusion, and it, to me, rebuilds the body cell by cell from the inside out. Nourishing herbal infusions literally are nourishing. And most people start to see some results from using them even within a couple of weeks. But the results that can accrue from long-term use, I've been drinking nourishing herbal infusions as my primary beverage for over 30 years now.
Okay.
So linden, comfrey, oat straw, nettles, and what was the last one?
Red clover.
Red clover.
Red clover. We're having the Red Clover Conference coming up in May to talk about all of the many amazing uses of our friend Red Clover, or as I laughingly say, the most important times to use Red Clover is if you have a cancer diagnosis or don't want to have a cancer diagnosis, want to be pregnant or are pregnant, or lactating or want to be lactating, and it's these three times that most books will tell you you shouldn't use red clover at all. That's worth having a red clover. We're having a red clover conference to reassure people that the books and the websites are so wrong.
My goat just had two baby kids 2 days ago. Do you happen to know if I could give her red clover since she's lactating?
Of course you can. The goats love the infusions. As I was just saying, I generally don't make it into an infusion for them, though. I just let them eat the herbs.
Yeah.
Now, red clover is a pretty expensive herb to feed your goat, unless you can get red clover hay, in which case it might be less expensive, but it's around about $25 a pound.
Okay. Well, just sprinkle a little bit, right?
If she needs it. Yeah,
she just hit.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah, she just had babies, so. Okay, and may
most girls who have babies are able to take care of them without any special help, without any special things from us.
Okay. We don't
need to help nature along. Nature already knows how to do it.
Yes, ma'am.
We'll probably do a pretty good job. Every once in a while, you know, things get hung up. It's absolutely true, but fortunately, it's not the norm. Oh, I'm so sorry. I have to say goodbye and bring blessings to you because my guest is here, and I want to hear what she has to tell us about African American herbalism and a whole host of other interesting topics. Thanks so much for calling, and please feel free to call back again anytime you want to. And I want to say greetings to Kedaya Preciado. I'm pretty sure that it's Kedaya. I'm not sure about the Preciado. She's a young stay-at-home wife and mother. She has two toddlers. She has less than a quarter of an acre, but she grows hundreds of pounds of food. She cooks all of her food from scratch and preserves it. She loves gardening, raising chickens, making natural beauty products and herbal remedies for her family. She's a community herbalist, an author, and a creator specializing in teaching African and African American herbal traditions. Kedaya is a self-professed kitchen herbalist and teaches others how to be a kitchen herbalist. She has a TEA method that empowers her students to craft unique, delectable, potent, and effective herbal blends. And 4 levels of safety, which offers a structured foundation ensuring safe exploration of herbs. Add to that her 4-step journey, which embodies holistic healing, promoting gradual progress and deepening of knowledge. What a wonderful bouquet of offerings. Welcome to the show, Gedalia.
Thank you, thank you.
And please tell me how to pronounce your last name.
Preciado. Cadilla Preciado.
Cadilla Preciado. Thank you
yes.
so much. All right. So we are very excited to hear anything that you would like to tell us about African herbalism, about your garden, about your tea method. What would you like to talk about first?
Oh, we can definitely start with African herbalism.
Okay.
All right. So African herbalism is the oldest system of medicine that we actually have. But I would say it's the least explored. And so I always say you wouldn't pick up a book and start, you know, in the middle or at the end, the last chapter. You have to start from the beginning, especially if you want a well-grounded, holistic, back-to-our-roots approach. And so African herbalism looked different because it's many different people, 52 different countries. But one of the observable things that you can see throughout all of the different peoples, tribes, is that there was a focus on observing different patterns and different systems and how we fit into them. I just say, just as you sit down, like, you know, speaking to an acquaintance and getting to know them, we have to go back to building a connection with herbs and kind of listening intuitively and intently to them, the same way we do as our people.
Green allies. It's a relationship. And I agree with you that this is where we started with herbalisms. We started rolling in the plants, absorbing them dermally, sitting in them,
right.
sleeping in them, eating them, rubbing them on each other.
Right. And I think we need to get back to that and be more, you know, more like children. Once we become adults, a lot of times we lose some of our imagination, our creativity. And I always say, again, you wouldn't, like if you were standing in front of me, I wouldn't say, oh, I need to finish reading your autobiography first before I can talk to you. But that's the way that we approach plants. Like we need to read about them first when we should actually just go out and study with them and learn with them, listen to them.
So African herbalism doesn't necessarily mean that we have to learn about the plants of Africa.
Oh, no. And nowadays, there are so many different plants that we might not even realize actually are derived from Africa. And we use them all the time. Things like, you know, hibiscus or cacao or carob, mints. There's three different mints that are indigenous to Africa. So we use these plants all the time, but we don't know, you know, maybe those ancient origins that they have.
Cotton is indigenous to Africa, yes?
I'm sorry?
Cotton.
Thompson?
Cotton. The fiber,
oh,
cotton.
Yes, cotton, yes, cotton. Yes, it is. Very ironic, yes, that it is.
Yes, in the apprentice house, I have a chart of all of the continents with some of the major plants that grew up on those continents and that are so important to us now.
Right, yes. Yeah. So we don't even think about it. African herbalism is more of relearning the traditions of our forefathers. And like I said, using observation more, looking and at the characteristics of different plants. Just as we, you know, see people and they have different personalities, the plants do too. And so they didn't have or they didn't use microscopes to try to figure out about different herbs. So they actually had to use their curiosity. They had to, you know, what does this plant look like to me? What does it feel like to me? What does it taste like to me? So it's about reconnecting with all of the different senses that we have. And I say today's herbalism, I always call it modern herbalism because I think it models modern medicine. And I don't think that people try to, but, you know, with all this new smart technology, you know, we're not smarter as a society. The further we get away from the natural, the more we actually decline as a society. So it's just relearning and going back to what's natural and using our intuition more than more of the scientific, yes, herbalism is, you know, scientific, mathematics, there's all these different components, but using our right, the right side of our brain as well when we approach the plant.
So how do you manage to grow thousands of pounds of food on a quarter acre? And keep chickens, I think.
I'm sorry?
And do you keep chickens as well on that quarter acre?
Yes, I do. And so, yeah, we actually have less than a quarter acre. I think it's 0.23 acres. My husband doesn't like that, you know, I took over pretty much everything. But, yes, we do have our chicken coop, and I love that I'm able to, you know, even just quote-unquote weeding, taking some of the plants that I don't want, it's beneficial and wonderful, or things that we have too much of to give to the chickens. So it really works, and they provide, you know, fertilizer and different things like that. So it's symbiotic. But I do a lot of vertical gardening, do a lot of – there's not much space to walk. It's definitely not all straight lines. You're going to be touching the plants, you know, as you're moving through it. We have lots of different trees, and we just – the way that we kind of landscape was just to get as much as we can. I started trying to do square foot gardening, but I found like I needed to put a plant inside of each of the four squares. So we just really packed, and, you know, I always say my plants have to be very strong because I don't always follow the rules or the rule book, or I don't always give it as much space as it might like. But I see, and a lot of times plants can adapt. And I also see what works. The things that grow very easily, like for me, cucumbers really love my garden. And so just a month of harvesting, I actually pulled them up earlier, we had over 100 pounds just of cucumbers. And so we had we had relish, we had pickles, we had all that we needed for a year. And I was making even cucumbers, different salsas. I was just running out of ideas to use it. But that's one of the ways that we do it. We have a
my cucumbers give me one or two cucumbers, and then they get eaten by these little beetles with black and yellow stripes, or they get a squash borer in their stalk. What do you do about that?
Oh, yes, definitely. I have issues with squash bugs in particular, and so what I found is that I grow a little bit earlier than we're supposed to start because we only have a moderate growing season. Last frost is April 15th. But I'll start sometimes early. I really push the limits, and I cover plants until they're ready, and I actually grow all of the cucurbitae family, so like the cucumbers, the squash. I love them, but I grow them earlier so that by the time those bugs come, I just pull them up, and I'll have something else growing in its place. Because I've actually
That is really a smart way to do it, and I've noticed that too, that they'll bear fruit, and then the bugs come, it's all over. So getting a good start on it, that's a very wise way to do that.
Yeah, and I've learned that certain things, it's just really hard to fight, and there's just too many things can get away from you in an instant, and so I just you know, make things easier whenever I can. So growing them earlier and covering them really helps, but then, of course, you know, you can't always cover them forever. So
do your toddlers like to help you in the garden?
Yes, they do. But, you know, little hands, a lot of times they're 50% helpful and 50% not. Sometimes they'll go harvest something that my flowers or something that I was, you know, that I was waiting for them to bloom. They'll sometimes harvest them early. So, but it's a wonderful experience. And they'll go and find their own food. They have their favorites that they really love to eat. And I think that's the way to start children, to get them to eat healthier. They'll want to do it when they're tasting really fresh and, you know, delicious, nutritious food with actual flavor. They eat broccoli, peas. They love peas. They'll eat those, and they don't even get inside. So, yes, they do help me. And they're just really naturals. I think herbalism really is much more natural than many people believe nowadays, because a lot of times as an adult is when we approach them.
Herbal medicine is people's medicine. It's the medicine of the people worldwide, without a doubt. And children take to it so easily and so naturally. And when they grow up with it, you know, I always tease that my daughter, who takes care of virtually all of her health challenges with herbs and has an incredible pharmacy of herbal remedies that she's made, if people ask her about herbs, she says, well, I'm not an herbalist.
Because it just is natural to her, you know.
That's what.
And she doesn't need the title,
it's not
even.
Like special.
Right.
So let's see. You have a TEA method.
Yes. I created this method, and then I kind of realized it was a method, and there's a couple of cool things about it. So it has three T's, an E, and two A's. And if you just use the three T's, I say that's the perfect recipe that you can use to check yourself. I don't like to give rigid rules or, you know, instructions, but it's just a guideline for those who are new to herbal remedies and they start making their blends. Just the three T's will make a beverage blend, and then you incorporate the E and the two A's when you're making a more medicinal blend, you know, for a specific purpose. So the three T's are taste, texture, and time. So I'm all about making sure that teas look equally as good and taste really good, especially that's how we can get people to be more open to it. A lot of times they think that everything tastes like grass, but we have all different flavors just like we have with food and even more complex flavors we have in our plants as opposed to the food, which is, you know, usually bred to taste a certain way. The texture is just to incorporate not just all, you know, bland greens, but to mix it up, to liven it up. But with that texture component, you have to pay attention to time. So just making sure whether it's going to be, you know, steeped or boiled. So just paying attention to those three things, you can have a really good beverage blend. And then the E and the two A's is the energetics, the action, and the affinity, as an organ affinity. So those are a little bit more complicated. I don't wouldn't have enough time to kind of go into those more, but those are what you would look at when you're making a medicinal blend. You have to make sure that the affinity is right, the action that is needed is right, and then also the energetics that that's going to be right for the person, the plant, and even the illness that they're dealing with. You know, what does it actually call for? So this is, it's just a way to check oneself. So I always say, once I shared my method with my students, a lot of times they're going through it by each line, and I'm like, don't do that. You know, use your intuition. You come up with a recipe, and then you can just check yourself just to make sure that you paid attention to those different things and make sure that you're addressing everything that you want to.
The affinities are very interesting, and you mentioned before that African herbalism, and I think you said, and I agree with you, that herbalists and healers all over the world have looked for patterns. They've looked for patterns in nature, mm-hmm. and patterns human beings, and ways to connect healing and patterns. You know, I'm thinking of the people of the desert Southwest putting the healing person in the middle of a sand painting that they're creating around them. All the way to the doshas of Ayurvedic medicine or the five elements of Chinese medicine. Is there a particular group of affinities that you work with?
So the affinities are more like, actually, the African herbalism has similarity to Chinese medicine in the five different, they say, you know, elements. But we look at it as the five main organ systems, and so there are complementary organs. So by addressing one organ, it's going to benefit another organ that is in that similar system. And so I always say that it's important to not just think about, let's see, I'm trying to think of how I can condense it quickly in an analogy, because as you can see, I like analogies a lot. But like if you are a delivery person and you're carrying parcels and then you have a delay, that's going to affect all of the different parcels that or packages that come after that. But a lot of times we focus on, you know, just the symptom, and we're not thinking about the effect, the cause and effect that happens. And so with affinities, we're looking more at systems. We're always looking bigger. So we look not just at what's going on physically, but what's going on hormonally, chemically, what's going on emotionally. It's just putting all of those different things together. So when we look at the affinities, we want to make sure, a lot of times what people will say, they'll say a broad category of herbs. So they'll say, oh, I need a diuretic, or oh, I need a this or a that. But you have to make sure that the one that the remedy is going to be organ specific, which is that organ affinity. But then you also have to make sure that the way that the herb actually works, the pathway that it works, is going to address what you're actually looking for. So, you know, it's not just enough to say I need an anti-inflammatory herb, but maybe the way that it works to, you know, modulate that inflammation is what we would look more at for the affinity to make sure that it's that that match and, you know, that unison.
Beautiful. That's beautiful. Something came up at Ancient Roots Israel conference today, which I always find very fascinating. And that is there a difference between chicory and dandelion? Now, obviously, there are different plants.
Mm-hmm.
But there was someone who was saying, oh, they're used interchangeably, whereas I think that their affinities are quite different.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree. I would think that would be
something. Tell us a little bit about your experience with chicory and dandelion. And how this
yes.
works with the affinities. I think it helps people because most people are familiar with these two plants.
Right. Yes. I would definitely say, like, you know, because they're both, you know, bitter, sometimes they may be used as, you know, coffee substitutes. People might think of them interchangeably in that way. I don't actually use chicory that much, so I can't give that much input on it. But from the African herbalism perspective, we would group them very differently, not just because they have the same, you know, not because they have that similar action, but just from even the colors, that tells us that they have different ways that they work in the body. That means that they have, you know, different phytochemicals that they have that affect different parts of the body. And so I can't say too much on that example, but I would say that they are, you know, all of the plants, even though they can be used interchangeably, there's always a time when one's going to be better than the other. I'm trying to think of if I can think about.
One of the things that I see right away is that chicory has purple flowers and dandelion has yellow flowers.
Yes.
Or you could call them blue, pink, purple. They're not like
mm-hmm.
dark purple. They're pale colors. And in general, we think of the bluey, purpley colors as cool colors, and the yellow colors as warm colors.
Is that?
So I start out by saying, okay, perhaps chicory is more cooling than dandelion, and then I look at it and I say, oh, isn't that interesting? Dandelion only grows in the full sun. Whereas chicory, it likes sun, but it also likes that little bit of shade, and the flowers close up in the sun. So this adds to that, cooling. Plus, I think of yellow being in a lower chakra in the body and purple being in a higher chakra in the body. And the chicory grows up taller, and the dandelion, even a big dandelion, stays low.
Right.
So I see a powerful action of dandelion in heating the whole middle part of the body, the spleen, the pancreas, the liver, the gallbladder, and really helping things flow. And I see chicory as really helping people who are in their minds and whose digestive problems are connected to their thinking process. Perhaps they're people who think about what they should eat.
Yes, actually, that actually aligns with African herbalism, different concepts. The length of the roots or how if the plants grow to the ground all tells us different things about the plants. And in particular, the colors with the yellow that usually does is for elimination and digestion, whereas the purple is more of the nerves and circulation. But I just haven't used chicory enough in that instance. I was trying to think of two other plants – that maybe are very similar that I can use interchangeably and kind of give a better example. I don't know
yes.
if you can think of one.
Please.
Let's see. But I would think that might even be like someone saying something like a cleaver or a chickweed, because they do have a lot of similar properties with, like, you know, water retention as lymphatics. They're both very nutritive. They can be used on the skin a lot of times for, you know, itchiness, eczema, things like that. So somebody might think that a plant like that are very similar. Even their leaves are very small. You know, they both grow in the backyard. Of course, cleavers cleave to you, but I think they're both more like very similar, just in color. They both have the green color and the chlorophyll in them. So they do have a lot of similarities. But when would you use, you know, one over the other? I think of cleavers more as a stronger lymphagogue that I might go to. Instead of chickweed. So I think that there's just always those little nuances of how the different plant works. I always say that you can start with a long list, but the more that you hear more about what the person's going through, the more that you think about the herb, like that it's when you hear about certain herbs or you think about certain herbs, you kind of think of that person that it's for. And so even though they may have similarities or even though they may taste the same, it doesn't mean that they're doing the same things or it doesn't mean that they're doing it in the same way. Hopefully I explained that in a way that's a bit cohesive.
Well, I have been a very negligent host here because I have so enjoyed talking with you. And so I haven't asked you to let people know how they can get in touch with you. Please do that.
Oh, thank you. Yes. So you can find me on Yaz Apothecary, which is YAHSApothecary.com. And you can also find at my name, Khadija Preciado, on YouTube, on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. I'm really more of a YouTube person, but you can find me on all those platforms as well.
That's K-H-A-D-I-Y-A-H. Preciado.
Yes. Mm. To make it easier, you can also at Her Healthy Home on YouTube. And I do, you can also go to herhealthyhome.co for my website. But we've since switched from that name. But some people do know me by Her Healthy Home.
Her Healthy Home. How perfect. What would you like to leave in the hearts and the minds of everyone who's listening to you tonight?
I think that it is so important that we relearn the tradition of our forefathers. We don't need, you know, books are wonderful, but we really need to actually speak more with the plants and listen more to our intuition, because we intuitively know so much more than we give ourselves credit for. I would love to see people think outside of the box, experimenting more, being inquisitive and not always going for, you know, the easy surface level. And also for us as teachers to show people more of how to find the answers as well, so that herbalists will be much more confident. I feel like a lot of herbalists are not very confident. They don't want to leave the nest. But this is something that comes natural to us. You can watch, as you said, children. And so reconnect and rediscover and just really relearn herbalism, not from a modern perspective, but from the way of our forefathers, and we won't be led wrong.
I also think that what you're proposing is a really good counter to loneliness.
Oh, yes, definitely. Because the plants
and
are
abundant. That was the theme of the conference that I just participated in, the Ancient Roots Israel, was plants over politics.
Yes,
so
I love it.
So whatever we agree or don't agree about, let's all agree about green blessings. I believe that we are reweaving the healing cloak of the ancients. And I want to thank you for adding these strong ancestral fibers to our weaving. Really appreciate the work that you are doing. May you spread it far and wide. herbal medicine is people's medicine. It's the medicine that grows right outside your door. Thank you, Kadiah. Thank you, Sarah Ellen. And thank you, everyone who's listening, for helping restore herbal medicine to its rightful place as people's medicine. Until I see you next week, green blessings and good night, everybody.
Good night.